You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Christy Cameron. We had planned to have the head of the union on, or one of the executives, and they are not able to make it. We are talking about the strike at Carleton University that is in the first day. Hopefully they're going to get a deal and students can get back to class, back into labs. It's a critical time of year because obviously heading into exams and people need to be able to finish. Here is that union executive, Noreen Cawley, talking about why they're out on the line.
Contract instructors at Carleton earn 15% less than the contract instructors at the University of Ottawa. Graduate students make up about 7% of the student population, and the majority of graduate students are also teaching assistants.
All right. So that is Noreen Cawley talking about why they're out. And so there's an impasse here, and we will continue to monitor that. I got this text that I want to read because it, you know, it's provocative to say the least. We were talking about Ryan Reynolds. You think someone that spends $1 billion on a team is going to want to be told who he has to partner with? This person's talking about the Ryan Reynolds discussion Scooby and I had. You think the new owner wants to give the spotlight to some minority owner movie star? Almost laughable. Dude has what, $50 million tops to chip in on a $1 billion purchase? Almost the dumbest storyline I can imagine that the media started salivating all over. Gretzky and John Candy sure turned Toronto into a success, right? I think he's referencing the Argos there when John Candy and Gretzky partnered up. Okay. First of all, I get your point of view that if you're a billionaire and you're a consortium, you don't necessarily need someone the size of Ryan Reynolds. But I believe, even if you don't like him, and I'm not a massive fan, but his ability to communicate and to pump up a product and a team, that's his track record with Wrexham. And it's not just like social media. He's making documentaries about it. You know, you think about a new owner with someone like Ryan Reynolds marketing documentaries, whether it's like an F1 style behind the scenes documentary on the Sens with people like Brady Tkachuk in the mix. You don't think that an NHL executive suite is salivating at that prospect? I'm sorry. I think you're wrong. I think they would be. And I don't think someone like that comes around every day. And I think you're underestimating. He's not just a Hollywood star. And that's the point Matt was making. I think it's much more than that. But I appreciate your text. And yeah, I mean, look, maybe he's going to get blown away. He's not going to be a part of this. And it'll all just be a big fantasy thing that we spent way too much time talking about because it was easy to talk about. The other thing, not to defend the media, let me defend the media. The reason he's getting so much attention is because in these situations, nobody's talking publicly, right? So it's rare to have someone of his star quality and ability to, and his profile, be involved in a process like this. If you recall the last Le Breton Flats fiasco, Melnick and John Ruddy, you know, John Ruddy does not speak to the media. So it is difficult to get a sense of where someone like that is at. And if there are bettors involved here that are serious money, which there are, they do not communicate publicly until after the fact. So if Ryan Reynolds is getting a lot of attention, it's because he's there and he's accessible and he is on the Tonight Show talking about buying the Ottawa Senators. I'm sorry. That's newsworthy. Yeah, Chris.
Graham, there's a guy on Twitter, Joe Pompliano, who follows sports and business, and he was talking about how Wrexham, the football club, how since Reynolds and, you know, invested along with the other actor. Anyways, they signed deals with TikTok, Expedia, Vistaprint,
yes.
Aviation, American Gin. You know, like, it's just
amplified that obscure team. And I'm not saying our Ottawa Senators are obscure, but megaphone them in all sorts of media in a way that would not happen if Reynolds was not involved. Okay, so with that texter, I disagree. And we'll see what happens.
By the way, Rob McElhenney is
the other
actor that...
With Reynolds?
Yes.
All right. Crack research department behind the glass there. Excellent work. Excellent work. Thank you. Here's another text on Ryan Reynolds. You can't expect to use public money, especially during these hard times. I agree that this is not going to be easy for the politicians on council. Like, but there is an inevitability here. Now, if the new owner comes in, if there is a new owner who comes in and out of the goodness of their hearts will buy it and build it lock, stock, and barrel, no public money. Yeah, I don't care. Like that, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars, if not higher, maybe a billion just for the rink in the entertainment complex. It's very, very serious money. So that my only point is, and I don't know this, all I'm doing is going on the record in Canada. Yes, other rinks have been built without taxpayers' money. Toronto's formerly ACC Center, now Scotiabank Place, Montreal's as well. I would just suggest to you that those franchises are beyond bank and have been for decades and decades and decades. And we're just in a different situation. We're similar to Edmonton. We're similar to Calgary. They're going through their process now too. Anyway, I am in for Christy Cameron. When we come back, we're going to talk to bylaw about all sorts of things. Stay with us. I'm Graham Richardson. Ottawa Now is back in just a moment.
This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson in for Christy Cameron. Glad you're with us. It's that time of year again. The melt is on. And if you have dogs, I don't know what kind of shape your backyard's been in, but bylaw is reminding you with a fairly intense picture of a pooch and lots of little presents left over the winter through various storms in the backyard. This is on private property, your backyard. Michael Lalonde, supervisor and acting public information officer for bylaw, joins us now. Michael, tell me about this image and why you wanted to send this message.
Essentially, it is a time of year where the snow is melting and we've neglected our backyards for the winter and postponed picking up that dog poop in a timely manner. So this message is to remind people that, you know, as the snow melts, you have to pick up your dog feces in a timely manner and to keep monitoring as the snow continues to melt. It's definitely a nuisance for your neighbors and also for if in the parks where you're supposed to pick up immediately when the snow is melting, that people want to enjoy the fresh air and the outdoors at this time of year. And we have to all do our duties as dog owners to make sure we pick up our dog feces so it doesn't create a nuisance or an eyesore for anybody.
Have you, is it a bylaw infraction if it's on your property that it hasn't been cleaned up?
That is correct. So the animal care and control bylaw does stipulate you have to pick up your dog feces within a timely manner. When our officers investigate these type of complaints, we look at several factors such as the size of the property, the type of dog, how frequent a dog goes outside, just in order to mitigate those factors so it doesn't become a public nuisance to your neighbors.
That's a good reminder. I have neglected in the past, not so much now. My dog sort of waits for the walk, which we think is just the weirdest thing. Ours, which is fine, and then of course we pick up and we bring bags with us. And this is one of those emotional issues that bylaw has to deal with. Whether it's dog owners reacting to a call that someone has called about their dog, or the neighbors who can really smell the dog if the owner hasn't picked up?
It's definitely an unpleasant situation when we have to go knocking on a door because we receive a complaint and have to address that situation with the dog owner. It's almost like they feel embarrassed that someone put in a complaint about them, and we're there addressing and telling them that they have to pick up after their dog, or they were caught in a park setting not picking up after their dog for something that takes 2 seconds to do. And I think, like I said, as all dog owners, we have a responsibility to ensure we have bags on us and to pick up after a dog, especially that if it's not on your own property, that we're not leaving that task to one of our neighbors to take care of our dog.
Right. And do you give a warning at first, or do you go right in there and fine? I guess it depends on the situation.
It all depends on the situation. There's some parks we will monitor, and in a year we'll do a blitz where we will give out a bunch of verbal warnings, but it has escalated to some years where we have just gone straight to a fine. It all depends on the severity and the how responsive the owner is to willing to pick up after his dog after we instruct him to.
All right. It's a good reminder. The melt is starting. Spring is in the air. Let's not ruin anybody else's fumes or whatever, and just pick up after your dog after a long winter. Appreciate your time, Michael. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right, that's Michael Lalonde, Supervisor and Acting Public Information Officer for Bylaw, reminding people that if someone complains that your backyard's full of poop from your pooch, they can fine you. They can fine you. And I got a text just now. Can dog poo go in the green bin? The answer is yes. The answer is yes. You can green bin your dog poo. In fact, I believe they prefer that. Not the dogs. Dogs don't care. The waste people. It's better to compost it. In fact, some city garbage cans and garbage receptacles on our walk specifically say, please don't put dog waste in here because it's going to the landfill, not the green bin. So there you go. There's your answer. Getting a couple of texts on Ryan Reynolds and the Senators. Hi, Graham, Christine here. What's not to like about Ryan Reynolds, a.k.a. Bruce? The guy's Canadian, very loyal to Canada. Even though he made his life and fortune in the U.S., he's done COVID vax promos for Ottawa Public Health. He's been involved with fundraising for PPE for Canadians. He's a philanthropist and an entrepreneur. I, for one, hope he's successful in his bid for the Ottawa Senators. It will put this city on the map, as the saying goes, and bring a profile to the team. Go, Ryan, and go, Sens. Go. I hate the idea, thank you, Christine, I hate the idea of public money going to private business, but I believe an NHL arena downtown would bring more tourist money downtown. I am reminded, by the way, of All-Star Weekend and what downtown was like during All-Star Weekend. And that atmosphere was quite something. And it was special because of where it was, And so... hard not to get excited about something like that. We'll see what happens. Lots of steps to go. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Christy Cameron. We are going to break for news and our political heat panel after news when we come back on Ottawa Now.
Now, political heat on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Welcome back. I'm Graham Richardson, in for Christy Cameron on this pre-budget day. Our political heat panel has assembled. Sharon Carr, political strategist and former deputy chief of staff to Bill Morneau, is here. Kate Harrison, vice chair of Summa Strategy, and Cam Holstrom, founder and principal at Nipawa Strategies. Welcome to you all. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Greg.
Hello, hello.
Sharon, I want to start with you. If you're in the Liberal camp, what are you hoping for tomorrow? We've seen some leaks, and obviously they want a day where we're not talking about Chinese interference, allegedly, into the election process and other things. What do they need to do to deliver that tomorrow?
Well, I think the focus tomorrow for them is going to specifically have to be around a few things. What are they doing on the climate file? But most importantly, out of everything, what are they doing on the affordability file? We've heard a couple tidbits here and there that there's going to be certain rebates, whether it's a grocery rebate, whatever they're going to do for a cost of living. So I think if I was the Liberals and I was looking at the best way to get a good soundbite and to get a good result in terms of what's coming out of the budget, I would really hone in on the affordability aspect. Now, we saw last year they did this $500 rebate for people who are renting. And as much as that sounds great, it's not exactly consequential. For example, for someone who lives in Toronto, $500 does not cover pretty much anything for rent. So they're going to have to balance the idea of being modest and somewhat restrained, but also showing Canadians that they are suffering.
Well, Kate, what about that? I mean, They can't just keep giving out money, or can they?
They can't. That's part of why we're in this predicament. It's not all of why, but certainly the government spending hasn't helped our fiscal position. I actually think the GST rebate, styling it as a grocery rebate, is smart politics for the Liberals. It's probably the only thing they can realistically do to fight food inflation, barring massive changes to our supply chain. So I actually think it's a good political move, even if there's no way of actually controlling where those funds are directed. But if that's the only retail politics piece in this budget, I think people are going to be left feeling a little bit puzzled. The carbon tax is going up. That'll add another 14 cents to a liter of gas April of this year. So people are feeling the pinch there. And what should be in the budget that I think we won't see, Graham, is some type of a genuine strategic review of existing programs and services. A $6 billion review was promised. We haven't heard anything about that. That's where we need to be focusing our efforts in terms of freeing up more cash and keeping it in people's pockets, is by taking a look at the government's own expenditures.
Going at the civil service, reviewing, which is a nice way to say squeezing budgets, which has not been done since 2015. And the spending has gone way up. Your point, Kate.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this is against the backdrop, of course, of a potential public service strike. So again, this is, if this had been done earlier, maybe the politics would be less, there'd be less heat around the politics around this issue, but it should have begun now. And now, unfortunately, the government's back is against the wall where they have to find savings. And so maybe some of those cuts are going to have to be a bit deeper.
Cam Holstrom, if you're the NDP, we heard earlier today Jagmeet Singh now trying a new line that, you know, he's not happy not being in government, but he's getting things from government. Is there going to be some big orange flag in this budget that he'll be able to claim as his own?
Well, there's going to be some things there. You're going to see, I'm assuming you're going to see some kind of extension of a furthering of dental care, which is going to be something that the NDP's already been out there asking for, this HST rebate. So if you call it a grocery rebate or whatever you want to call it, that's something they can plant their flag to. But, you know, it's going to be that continued progression of actually getting delivery. And you know what? Sometimes, you know, getting things for people, delivering doesn't always have the greatest, it's not the greatest for instant gratification, you know what, but it's the job of governing. Mm. It's serious and it's important. I will point this out, though. I think the Conservatives are going to have a really interesting time with this tomorrow, because first of all, Kate raised the idea here that, you know, this, that more money out for people is going to affect inflation, which under normal circumstances might be the case. But it's not in this case, because it's all on the supply side and it's on the labor side. It's not more government.
That's where inflation's coming.
Yeah, but also I would point out, if this is going to be the attack, well, you know what? I can label the exact same attack at the governments, the conservative governments of Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta. And it just so happens that in Manitoba and Alberta, they're doing it based in the electorate in a couple of months. So you could also, you can pull all kinds of stuff around about that.
Conservatives' governments are handing out checks too, is your point. You could yeah. Turn that. Oh, okay.
But I will point this out. The one thing I'm going to be very interested to see here, and we've been seeing this throughout the various provincial budgets that have come out so far ahead of this, it's been the raise in revenue and the fact that in this period, we are seeing more and more tax revenue coming in because more and more people are working. I'm going to be very curious to see how that plays into this federal budget and just the bottom line. Because if it's similar to what we've seen in a lot of the other provinces, that revenue side is going to be a fair bit higher. And the question is, what does that do to that deficit? What does that do to the bottom line? Because maybe you don't need to do as big a review if you actually have more people working and bringing in more money.
Hmm. Okay. Ontario, we saw that too. Their deficit's getting smaller, in fact, going away, partially because of population growth, which has been robust, to say the least. I want to ask all of you this, and then we'll move on. Your take on the storytelling aspect of budgets. I honestly think that has kind of faded. The rolling road show of sending ministers out and pumping up a budget for days on end. I mean, Ontario had theirs last week. It's already gone away. Sharon, is the days of sort of storytelling budgets for governments, is that fallen by the wayside? And if so, why?
It's funny you actually mentioned that, because I saw a tweet from a lobby firm that was pointing out like the tradition around shoes and what change in budget issues mean? And as someone who was part of five federal budgets, I know from my time there, every single budget had a theme, whether it be middle class, whether it be innovation, whether it be women. And we seem to have lost that a bit, I think, post-COVID, because there isn't really a direction. It's kind of like, how do we manage the cost of living? And I saw that in that tweet thread, because it just showed that Minister Freeland had gone to buy shoes at Simons. And I remember the days that every single shoe event I did had intent and purpose that was somehow connected to the theme of the budget, whether it's, say, science or whatever the case may be. So I do agree. I think that they've lost that, but I think it's just given the state of where we are right now with the economy and the crisis, the cost of living crisis.
Poppy Barley.
Massively normalized spending.
Sorry,
right?
Kate, go ahead.
I said we've normalized spending, and the pandemic did change this. People have gotten very used to the government having their back and being able to, you know, come up with funding for them in tough times. I think that has made it very difficult to land a budget message with that as the narrative, because people have been used to that for the last 2.5-3 years. So I think that that's also changed the dynamic in terms of, yes, not having a theme. Sharon's right there. That can help ground the narrative. But we're so used to government spending money that, you know, it's a 24-48-hour story.
I remember in my time on the Hill many, many years ago, and it was about government spending. And this is before COVID, of course. And one of the analysts said, you know what? We're going to get to a point here where the public doesn't care about big, huge deficits. And I was like, oh, there's no way. Because, I mean, I came up in the 90s, right, where it was the main driving story. And here we are, I think, to your point, Kate, where this kind of spending has been normalized and we'll just worry about it later and growth will take us out of it. Like, I'm not suggesting a Martin budget is in order here, but Kate, are you suggesting that maybe heading in that direction is probably a healthier thing for the country, at least at some point, if not now?
Yeah, I think so. But you also need to be able to describe it in a way that is micro and tangible to people's lives. The conservatives always are railing against debt and deficit, and philosophically and as a matter of principle, of course, that's the right thing to do. But gone are the days where you can rely on that as a message to carry you through. You need to talk about how you're going to target investment, how you're going to support those that need it the most, and how you're going to rein in spending elsewhere. I think that, you know, looking at a big macro debt deficit number, people's eyes just sort of glaze over and they wonder, okay, well, what's in it for me? So good political communicators are able to decipher that for Canadians.
It's true on every front. Like, Cam, they get angry about the $18 orange juice, but they don't get angry about $100 million wasted because they can't wrap their heads around it. Can a government, from your perspective, Cam, in this environment, at some point come in with an austerity budget, or are we years away from that?
Honestly, I think, well, it's twofold here. One, I think part of what people are seeing right now is, we especially saw it in that maybe the 10-15-year period after that Martin budget, and we're seeing the impacts of it now, where the government pulled out, where we pulled out of public housing, where we cut back on social services. We're seeing the impacts, right? We've been seeing the impacts for the last 10 years. And a lot of that funding is now going back, trying to fix the holes that those cuts created. So I think it's kind of swung the pendulum back. So do I think the pendulum would go all the way back to what happened in the mid-90s, Martin? No, but I think this has been kind of like a bit of a course correction, because you look at so many of the problems we're dealing with right now. Again, like, we're talking about inflation, the ability of people to find a place to rent or to buy a home. Like, the fact is we don't have housing stock. One of the major reasons why we don't have affordable housing stock or rental stock is because the federal government got out of the game. They gave up on it. And think about that lost generation or two of no federal investment or next to none of it in public housing, what that's done to the ability for people to rent and just the inflation involved in that. So I think people are looking at this on maybe a more balanced view. The one thing I will say, though, I absolutely agree with, is that I think it's going to be hard in this environment, because I think, I don't want to say it's a dour moment, but people, I don't think, are necessarily going to buy into a raw narrative at this point. People are. We know it's not the best of times. People are struggling, and I think people are kind of looking for maybe a more realistic tone, which is why I don't think, like, as much as I'd like to think there's going to be some big surprises coming tomorrow, I don't think there's going to be. I think a lot of what we're hearing so far is kind of what the tone of this thing is going to be. It's like, you know what? You know, we got to be careful. Yes, we need help. We're going to be here to help you. We're not going to overhelp you, but we're going to help you.
Okay. And I stepped on Sharon there when Bill Morneau was finance minister. His shoes, one of the budgets was Poppy Barley, an Edmonton company, fantastic company. Daughters took over a shoe business from their father and manufacture shoes in Mexico. And
they started by themselves, actually.
Yes.
They started themselves. We call them the NAFTA shoes because they were designed in Edmonton, made ethically in Mexico, and then transited over the U.S. And we actually did Poppy Barley 2 years in a row. The second year we repaired them, and that was our trade shield.
So, deep shoe politics. And you took a little bit of heat because they're high end, but they are excellent shoes. And I note that this budget, Freeland went discount at Simons. Anyway, it's a bit of fun. It's a bit of fun. Before I let you all go, I want to get to, we spent a lot of time talking about Biden. And I think it was Proudfoot in the Globe pointed out that Canadians just gush so easily when the U.S. president says something nice. And I thought that was, she said it much more eloquently in her column, but we flatter easily. What was your take though, Sharon, on the Biden visit? How significant was it? And what stands out for you?
I would say anytime a U.S. president comes to Canada, it is significant. And it's one of those moments where you put kind of partisanship aside. We've been in a period of time where the news cycle has been dominated by China. So it was nice to kind of have a moment where the Canada-U.S. relation kind of was shining. And they did reach agreements on things like Roxham Road, and it always brings a bit of pizzazz to Ottawa. It's not like any other time. So I think it's great. We always want to have a strong relationship with the U.S. next time that the president comes to Ottawa.
And for the cynics out there, he is one of the biggest celebrities in the world, if not the biggest, whoever is in the office. Kate, what was your take on it? I found it interesting, the tone Poilievre took and some of the choices he made. I just found it interesting. I'm not making comment on it, but just on the unvaccinated and the border, I found that interesting and got some positive reaction and others saying that that shouldn't be the top priority for him. Your take?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think Biden should come back once every couple months because I don't ever think I've seen downtown Ottawa cleaner than it was before
and busy.
His visit. Like, you could eat off of Rideau Street. Not that you'd want to, but anyway, yeah. it was pretty phenomenal. So interesting from the conservative perspective. I think getting a Poilievre meeting was a win for Poilievre. That doesn't always happen, the meetings with the opposition. So I wasn't surprised to see him play to the base, if you will, in that engagement by talking about those issues. I think, frankly, the vaccine status issue persists for a lot of conservatives, but it's also a fundraiser for the Tories. So I thought that he appropriately balanced kind of the positioning as a future statesman with playing to the base. And I don't think that a whole lot of business gets done at the state dinner. And my view on all that kerfuffle last week, was he invited, was he not invited, was probably just clerical error, but yeah, not really consequential.
Of course, you're going to invite the leader of the opposition. Cam, quickly to you on Biden's visit.
Well, you know what? To me, it was a good thing to see because honestly, it's something we hadn't seen in a long time. Let's be honest. It's been a long time since we had seen an American president come to town. So I think it's always good to have that. It's a good reminder. And obviously, you know, the old tradition of the first visit, that wasn't going to happen because of COVID. But you know what? The speech itself, I think, was good. You know, some nice lighthearted moments. You know, who doesn't enjoy a good poke against the Leafs? Like, heck, that's one way to pander to 90% of the country right there. So good on him to know enough to do it. Although raising the Flyers kind of made a little touch and go. But, you know, so be it. I would point out, though, I think for the government, they needed this. They needed that to kind of break up some of the media of what's been happening. Like,
it's been a brutal few weeks.
Well, think about it. When the stories broke the night before Mr. Biden showed up, you're basically bringing the world's media to your doorstep. That could have gotten a whole lot worse for the government pretty fast, but it didn't. And now they're going to have a budget on Tuesday. This is a chance to change the channel. This might be the last chance they have to try to put some good news out and actually try to push it in a different direction, because otherwise, I don't know. But hey, at the very least, we got a nice evening out of it, got a nice speech. Some people got a very nice dinner. The Aviation Museum is beautiful, so I'm glad to see more people got to see it in that environment.
Yeah, pretty good invite if you got one. Nice.
Yeah.
Cam Holstrom, Kate Harrison, Sharon Carr, thanks so much to all of you for being here.
Thank you. Take care.